Hello, I'm Will Stein, and welcome to Geography Island Jams. This podcast is in the same style as the BBC Radio 4 Desert Island Disc series, whereby each episode I ask my interviewee what 8 songs, book, and luxury item they would want to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. For rights reasons, the music has not been included in the podcast. You can find links to the 8 songs on the LSE Geography and Environment website. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Geography Island Jams. With me today, I have Head of Social Media at the LSE, Dave Smith. Dave has been Head of Social Media since May 2018. Dave is responsible for LSE's 5 main central channels. They include Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter. Beyond this, Dave and his team support hundreds of LSE-affiliated social media channels managed by different departments, research centres, central service divisions, and more. Like the international nature of the LSE student body, Dave has had an international life living in 4 different countries. Before moving to the UK, Dave has spent a year in Canada, 5 years in Japan, and spent the majority of his years growing up in Canberra, Australia. Dave did his undergraduate at the Australian National University, where he achieved a double degree with a Bachelor's of Economics and a Bachelor's of Asian Studies. However, Dave does have some geography roots, as he achieved a silver medal representing Australia in the International Geography Olympiad in grade 12. So on that, welcome, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you for the welcome and thank you for having me, Will.
So yeah, to start, I want to ask about this winning the silver medal at the International Geography Olympiad. What was that?
So it's been a while. That was grade 12. I don't know if you have it here in the UK, but in Australia, we have this thing at primary schools and high schools that is basically a national test. And kids that go to different schools in different states take the same test once a year. It's run by a particular university. And I think there's one in maths, one in English, science. And at the time, at least, they had a geography one. So I did geography all through high school, really loved it. And in year 12, we took the test and I ended up placing in the top 4 in Australia somehow. And that got me onto the Australian team for the International Geography Olympiad, which I had never heard of until the time. And so I got invited to join the Australian team. The other 3 were from Sydney. I was the one not from Sydney. They flew me up to Brisbane, where that tournament was being held that year. In previous years, it'd been in like Tunisia and in like Taiwan or something, but I got the 1 year when it was in Australia. I couldn't complain though, because I still got a free trip to Brisbane. But yeah, it was basically a 2-week camp, I guess, where we did geography things in Brisbane in the middle of winter, which is quite nice in winter. And yeah, ended up coming 2nd.
Oh, wow. God, I must admit, I do geography and I've never heard of the International Geography Olympiad. It's quite bad for me, I guess. But
I don't think there was a UK representation at this tournament. But there were something like 20, 25 countries.
Wow. That's quite a big deal. They're flying from all over the world to go to Brisbane.
Yeah.
But so yeah, we're going to kick off with the music. Can you tell me about the first song you've chosen to take with you?
Yeah. So for the most part, my list is kind of chronological by release date. It's not the whole way through. My first song is I Want You by Savage Garden. So I've chosen an Australian band, one that was big in the 90s when I was growing up. Savage Garden was also my first live concert. I remember, I think it was 1997, going to the convention centre in Canberra with my dad. I would have been, I don't know, 8 years old. It was just us. And I remember walking away having had like the best time and really, really sore ears. And I just wonder, at the time, obviously, I didn't think this, but I wonder now what that experience was like for my dad. Taking his small child to this live concert. But yeah, I've chosen this one because I just think it's a classic.
As I said, you've lived in numerous countries, but before we go into that, I wanted to hear about life growing up in Canberra, Australia. So do you have any favorite memorable or fun stories from your childhood growing up there?
Yeah. There's that one with my dad at the Savage Garden concert. Maybe another one. Canberra's like one of the coldest places in Australia.
What does cold mean? What would cold temperature be?
Well, I feel like people don't realize on this side of the world that like it snows in Australia. We have ski resorts. And so the closest ones are actually not too far from Canberra. And I remember the first time I went skiing, it was at, what was it called? This resort called Selwyn Snowfield.
Wait a sec, you went skiing in Australia?
Yeah.
Like snow skiing or sand skiing?
What's sand skiing? Is that a thing?
I don't know, I just imagine hot skiing. Wait, there's snow in Australia?
Exactly, yeah, there is.
I did not know that at all, wow.
It's a thing. I mean, I'm not saying the quality of the snow is great, but it is a thing.
Oh God, I really did not think you'd say that. Is it the mountains? Is that?
Yeah, so the Australian Alps kind of start down in Victoria, if you're familiar with Australian geography. and then the Great Dividing Range kind of like goes all the way up to the northern tip of Queensland. The snowy bits are down in the southern portion. So kind of that stretch between Canberra and Melbourne, not the whole stretch, but there is a bit where there's, I can think there's like 5 or 6 ski resorts, a couple in New South Wales, a couple in Victoria.
Oh my goodness, my life has been shaken. I really did not think that that was a thing. When I think of Australia, you just think of the outback, hot, heat. Is the snow can't be that all year round. It must just be a winter thing.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Okay. Only in winter. And sometimes, like, even the scheduled start date, they don't actually have any snow.
Fine. Forgotten, that's a very fun geography fact, I guess. I'd be very surprised if anyone, well, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I'd be surprised if anyone listening knew that fact.
Yeah, it's a thing. But my memory, I guess, is going to the snow for the first time, being a bit hesitant, as I think everyone is when they haven't skied before. And then just getting pushed down the hill.
So we're now moving on to your second song. Can you let me know what it is and for any reasons why you're taking it with you?
So, yeah, I think another one that just reminds me of growing up at home and actually kind of has a double meaning now. So it's Absolutely Everybody by Vanessa Amorosi. If you're familiar, it was like, I think one of the big songs for the Sydney Olympics in 2000. I think it was performed at the closing ceremony. I'm not 100% on that. But I just remember it. Like when I hear it, I think of the Olympics back then. And I said a moment ago, it has like a double meaning for me now. And that's because over this past summer at one of my socially distanced gatherings with some of my LSE friends, we were in a park and someone had brought a speaker. And I think we'd just been talking about things we would want to sing at karaoke if we could. Obviously, all the karaoke places being closed at the moment. And I suggested Absolutely Everybody because it's such a bop. And so we were playing it in this park and I hadn't heard it for years. And I just remember enjoying it so much and then playing it over and over again for the next couple of weeks. So now it reminds me both of the Olympics and of London.
So as we've just been saying, you've lived in Australia, but you've also lived in Japan, UK and Canada. And you said before you got the biggest culture shock moving to Japan compared to moving to the UK and Canada. Why is that? What did you mean by the culture shock being bigger?
Yeah, I guess my experience moving to Japan, maybe shock isn't the best word because I'd spent most of my life studying Japan and Japanese language. So, yeah, 90s Australian kids, a lot of us have studied Japanese in some capacity. It was, and probably still is, one of the most commonly learnt languages. So I basically studied it since I was 4 years old. And when I went to Japan for the first time, it was on a school trip for 2 weeks, and I really enjoyed it. This was in grade 12 as well, I think. And when I got back, I said to my mum, I want to go for longer. I want to go again. And so I applied to do a year over there, and I was successful. And it was great. But I think I was perhaps more confident in my Japanese ability than I should have been at that point. So I went from being pretty good in my Japanese classes at high school to be basically immersed in an environment where nobody spoke English. So I went to a Japanese high school. Everyone pretty much only spoke Japanese. I took all the classes. I lived with Japanese families that didn't speak the best or any English. And so I guess it was an adjustment. Not so much a shock in that I kind of knew about the culture, but obviously completely different and a learning curve, but obviously one that I really enjoyed. And I ended up going back a number of times.
So we're going to move on to your third song now. Can you tell me what it is and any reasons why you're taking it with you?
Yeah, so this one is Genie by Girls' Generation. So Girls' Generation is a K-pop band, so Korean, but they also sing songs in Japanese. And this song, I just remember it being massive in the year that I spent in Kyoto at university. So it's a Japanese language song sung by a Korean girl group. It also has some English in it. And when I hear it, it takes me back to that experience of being a student in Kyoto. Is that your first K-pop song on this podcast? K-pop / J-pop, I guess.
I should know this, shouldn't I? I know we've had Chinese artists, but I think like the first K-pop or J-pop, definitely first combined. I think it might just be actually, yeah, I'll give you that one. Congratulations. So
thank you.
Breaking into that category. So yes, going on to LSE, so you've been head of social media at the LSE since May 2018. What would you say you enjoy most about the job?
The job is really varied. I'm really lucky because I get to see all the like fantastic research that's happening and also see and celebrate like all the great people at LSE and share their experiences and their stories. So I'm really lucky that I kind of get to see everything that's happening across the university. Obviously not everything. We miss some things. I think that's it. Like you never have one day that's the same as the one before. It's always quite exciting. Another thing that I think I really enjoy about the job, it's just the random silly messages that people sometimes send us. So obviously we monitor our social media channels and we monitor the conversation about LSE on a daily basis. Sometimes you just see odd things, and sometimes it's just like, oh, someone's used LSE when they're actually talking about the London Stock Exchange. Or I think there's a school in the US called like Lincoln Southeast or something that occasionally pops up. But then you get the really odd ones. Like this morning we had one that said, can you retweet this so the Pepsi account sees my tweet? So yeah, they can be really entertaining.
And finally, before we move on to the next song, are there any parts of the job which you find most tricky or most challenging?
Yeah, there are. I mean, well, LSE has like quite a large, diverse community. There's always a lot happening around the school. And naturally, I think sometimes issues arise or debates happen and people take particular positions and share them online, which of course is totally fine. And I think debate is something that all universities should be home to, LSE not being an exception. And it's my team's job to monitor those debates and online conversations and read any messages that come our way. And I guess sometimes it is a little challenging being on the receiving end of, well, what can sometimes be, you know, colorfully worded opinions. and then having to be the messenger to make sure those sentiments are delivered to the people, delivered to and understood by the people that need to understand them. And yeah, so I guess sometimes that can be tricky, but it's part of the job. And as I said before, like, there's always so much really interesting stuff and wonderful community things happening around the school. So it's definitely not doom and gloom. There's a balance. But yeah, that's probably one of the most challenging things.
So we're now moving on to your fourth song. Can you tell me what is and any reasons why?
I can, yes. So my fourth song, this is the one I referred to earlier when I said it was my oldest one. It's I Want to Dance with Somebody by Whitney Houston. So I chose this one because every time I hear it, I am taken back to November 2017 when Australia, we had a national vote on gay marriage. And I think they announced the result on a Wednesday morning in November. It was like 10 a.m. or something. And I was working in Australia, in Canberra at the time. And the whole office just like gathered around the TV, probably like 40 or 50 of us. And this guy from the Australian Bureau of Statistics is at a press conference going through the results. And I finally get to the moment where they announce that the yes vote had won, and just everyone like exploding in celebration. It was such a great day. And then that was in the morning. Finished work at the end of the day, and by that time I think the local government had announced just this impromptu street party. So I think the mayor, or not the mayor, but equivalent of the mayor, chief minister of the ACT, Australian Capital Territory, so basically the mayor of Canberra, but not officially, is I think Australia's first and only like gay state leader. Anyway, he'd organised for this impromptu street party on this random Wednesday in the middle of November. And I went with a few friends, and I went with my partner. And by the end of the night, I just remember just dancing on the street with these randoms. And this particular song is the one that I remember the most vividly. It's such a classic too. And kind of, yeah, if I were stuck on an island and I needed something to cheer me up, then I think this is a good one.
Yeah, God, I can just imagine that being incredible. What a day on a Wednesday as well. You know, you didn't get the Thursday or Friday. You know, Wednesday's still quite firmly in the
when people like ask you, oh, do you want to grab a drink? Maybe not now in coronavirus, but like when people ask you, do you want to grab a drink, and you've got something on early in the morning, you're like, I'm not sure. It was one of those moments, one of those times when, like, the next day I was like, I'm so glad that I went.
No, sure.
It was really good. And I remember texting my friend who was one of those people who was like, I don't know, and ended up initially was like, I'm not gonna go, and then texting him about an hour in, I was like, you have to come. And he did. Yeah, it was amazing.
And that flows quite nicely into the next segment. So as well as being the head of social media at LSE, you're an active committee member for the LSE Spectrum LGBTQ+ staff network. So first, just for those who don't know what Spectrum is, can you just say a bit about what it is and what it does?
Yeah, so Spectrum is LSE's staff network that supports and advocates for LGBT+ issues internally. I think it's been around definitely since before my time at LSE. I think it's about 10 or 15 years. Don't quote me on that. But we meet regularly. We discuss issues that people in the various LGBT+ communities are experiencing, and how, well, procedures and systems that are in place at the school can be improved to make them more inclusive. We host events. We make appearances at like staff inductions. We have kind of just casual get-togethers, even now just like coffee mornings over Zoom. But yeah, ultimately, we're there to make sure that people in our community have a positive experience and one that's supported by the institution.
So why do you think staff networks like Spectrum are so important today?
I think we're really lucky. I mean, this has been my experience at LSE, at least, that like there's no hesitation, for me at least, in kind of being open about my sexuality in the workplace. But like, I worked in Japan, like I said just before, and I never felt comfortable disclosing that. And even now, I think if I were working there, even though pretty much everyone in my personal life knows and work life, I don't think they're at the same point in society. So I think it's important that we don't be complacent about these issues. And obviously it's not just LGBT issues that we have staff networks for, but yeah, that's it. That's, I think, what makes it so important. People, I'm from Australia, which is quite a liberal society, in the UK, which is another liberal society, but not everyone at LSE is like that. And so maybe they need to have like a face or someone to turn to help, I don't know, guide them through their experience at LSE.
Can you now tell me about the fifth song you'll be taking with you?
Yes. So I'm going to go back to my Australian pop music roots. This one is called My 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 by Troye Sivan. So it's a relatively recent one. And I've chosen this one because I think it came out right at the beginning of 2018, which was the year that I moved to London. And for about 4 or 5 months before moving here, I lived with my brother. And he told me the other day that this song came up in conversation. And he told me that when I was living there, I just played it on repeat. So I don't actually remember doing that. I mean, it sounds like me. But for me, it just reminds me of that year and kind of leaving Australia again. And then coming to London, it was that summer where it like was perfect weather the whole time. It didn't seem to rain much at all. And kind of an introduction to Europe. I managed to do quite a lot of travel before coronavirus hit. And yeah, so I guess it's kind of like one of those like milestone songs that reminds me of a particular time.
Going back to LSE, so you've been at LSE for over 2 years now. Do you have any favorite experiences or favorite events you've attended during that time?
I do. I think the one that will stick with me the most is the Nancy Pelosi event. So I'm really lucky, just in my role as head of social media, that I get to attend a lot of these big name events and often can be quite up close. So I think I was probably in like the second or third row of the old theater when she came back in. It was last year, wasn't it? 2019. So when else would I have that opportunity to meet someone in such a powerful position, somebody so high profile? I don't think I'll ever forget that. I really wish I had been at LSE before, because there's some other big names that visited that I obviously didn't have a chance to attend. I didn't have a chance to attend those events. So, but yeah, Nancy Pelosi.
Very nice. So we're now moving on to song number 6. Can you tell me what it is?
Yes. So number 6, I struggled with because I'm a big fan of Lady Gaga and she has too many good songs. So I asked my partner which one I should make it. And he said the one that I sing the most, apparently, is Edge of Glory. So that's my song, The Edge of Glory by Lady Gaga. I think I like this one because it has like a bit of an 80s vibe in the video. It's kind of like Madonna-esque. So this one kind of kills two birds with one stone, I think.
So as we've previously mentioned, you've traveled all over the world. I imagine you've tried lots of different dishes. Would you be able to talk me through what your favorite dish or dishes are?
Of course. Okay, so I guess my favorite dish from the four countries that I've lived in. So let's start with Australia, obviously, because I'm from there. It's not so much a dish, but a general, I guess, what's the word? Observation. A general observation. I think we just do coffee way better. I think we just do coffee and brunch better. We also have like just a different cafe culture, I guess. Like here, there's like cafes that don't open until like, I don't know, 8 or 9 a.m., which is like unheard of at home. Most of them are open by 7 a.m. Yeah, I think it's a part of the morning routine for a lot of people. And we've got like a much stronger like driving culture, at least in Canberra compared to London. So a lot of people drive to the cafe and grab a. Let's go next to Canada. I remember when we lived there, my dad had this obsession with this Canadian coffee chain called Tim Hortons. Are you familiar with that?
No, sorry, I was just trying to nod along.
I'm trying to think. I want to say it's kind of like Starbucks, but I think the menu isn't the same. And also, I haven't been there in quite a long time, so who knows? But I just remember like getting the donuts and just how much my dad enjoyed it. So that's one thing that I really remember. And then in Japan, the food is so good wherever you go, and it's so easy to get amazing quality food at a really great price. Pretty much wherever you go, you don't have to worry about your food experience when you're in Japan. So my answer generally for Japan is just everything. But one thing that I miss and really love about Japan this time of year in particular was they have these like all-you-can-eat rooftop oyster bars. So you pay equivalent of about £15, I guess, and they sit you up outside, up on the roof outside under those like nice warm outdoor heaters, and yeah, you just grill oysters as many as you want until you get full. Which probably doesn't suit those people that don't really like seafood, but I remember doing that every winter in Japan and really enjoying it. And then lastly, to the UK, just a Sunday roast. We don't kind of have the same tradition of going to the pub for a lunch meal. It's not embedded in, I think, the Australian experience as it is here. And it's I love it.
Brilliant. So now pressing on with song 7.
Yes. So another one I struggled with and ended up just putting it in because I really like it. And just because I think if I were stuck on a deserted island, it'd be something fun to listen to, something good to listen to. And that's Now I'm In It by Haim. So this song, again, another girl group. I think they're American. Perhaps slightly less poppy than the rest of my choices, but still very poppy. Yeah, I think this one, I just really like the song, but it also, it talks about mental health. And I don't know, I think it's just a song that has stuck with me, not because of any sort of personal issues, but just because it was one that I was like, oh, that's a topic that I've not really heard put into a song before.
Very nice. And then moving on to our final question, what is your favorite thing about being part of the LSE?
Oh,
the make or break.
Oh, I feel like this is the kind of stuff that we post on social media all the time.
Yeah.
I never actually thought about it myself.
And exactly, you'd be the one posting it. So now you're the one in the hot seat having to come up with the quote.
Yeah. You know what? I think we talked about like culture shock before. And one of my experiences living in Japan is that I was not because of anyone being malicious in any way, but it's very difficult not just to go about your life in Japan and not feel like you're an outsider. And part of that is because I'm like a white guy, obviously, in Japan. But yeah, it was something that by the end of the 5 years that I lived there kind of bothered me, just constantly being reminded that I was different. Not saying that different is bad at all, obviously. But I guess little things get to you. But since being at LAC, I feel like that never happens. I always feel like I'm a part of the community, even though my experience at LSE is wholly as a staff member. I've never been a student there, but I still feel like I'm part of it. And yeah, that's really comforting.
So we're now moving on to your eighth and final song. Can you tell me what it is and any reasons why you're taking it with you?
So this one is just my all-time favorite song, and probably one that'll play at my wedding. But it's Runaway With Me by Carly Rae Jepsen. So Carly Rae Jepsen is, obviously people know her from Call Me Maybe, but I think she's incredibly underrated. Call Me Maybe is probably her worst song. So if you think she's a one-hit wonder, please go and check her back catalogue, because she's got so many bigger bops than just that one. But this one is just such a fun song, and the beginning is, I just think, really iconic with the saxophone. And the message of the song is just, well, it's in the title, Run Away With Me. It's everything a song should be.
So now moving on to the last part, where, so you're allowed to take with you the Bible, the beverage report, and a book of your choice. What is the book you're going to be taking with you?
So this one I have chosen because I have a really short attention span and I need something to keep me interested. And so I'm going to go with A Dictionary of Chinese Characters. So in Japanese, they have three alphabets, hiragana, katakana, and they use kanji, which is characters of Chinese origin. And there are thousands of them. You need to learn about 2,200 to be able to read a newspaper, I guess. And I always found learning Chinese characters such a interesting part, a fun part of learning Japanese. But having not spent much time in Japan since I stopped living there a few years back. Well, I think I can still read them fine, but you forget how to write them. And I think even native speakers regularly forget how to write them. So I'd take A Dictionary of Chinese Characters and I would just write in the sand and practice.
Yeah, that dictionary is all yours.
No one's said that one before, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I said that's definitely a unique choice. But, you know, diversify the Geography Island Jams book library.
Yeah.
So now moving on to your luxury item. What luxury have you chosen to take with you?
So again, going with something practical and something that'll keep me entertained, I guess. You probably wouldn't call it a luxury item if you weren't stranded on a desert island. They're going to go with goggles. So that I can swim and I can see where I'm going. And I should probably have contacts too. But let's go with goggles.
And finally, the quote of choice. What quote are you going to be taking with you?
So, Julia Gillard, former Prime Minister of Australia. My quote is actually a portion of a famous speech that she gave in Parliament. But the quote is, "I will not be lectured about sexism and misogyny by this man. Not now, not ever." From her misogyny speech, I think it has been titled by the press. So this speech, it became a meme. Obviously, it was pretty big in the news at the time. I think it was voted recently Australia's biggest political moment in television, or something like that, in the era of television. I remember it became, or at least I saw it on a TikTok meme, which is fitting in my role. And yeah, it's always stuck with me. I know one of my friends has this whole speech printed out and framed, and it sits in the bathroom on the wall. and I think it's just a iconic moment in Australian political history, and it's Julia Gillard, someone I look up to. So that's what I've gone with.
A very good quote, I must say. And then, Dave, that brings us to the end of the interview. So thank you very much for telling me about your Geography Island Jams.
No problem. Thank you for having me, Will. It was good fun.